It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff Jarvis is here. Stacey Higginbotham. Lots to talk about, including the Time Warner AT&T merger going through. And just minutes before the show began, Comcast upping its bid for 21st Century Fox. What does this mean for consumers in the media landscape? We'll also talk about what makes a political ad and why the New York Times is mad at Facebook. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig. This Week in Google, episode 461. Recorded Wednesday, June 13th, 2018. The backhaul gonna bite ya. This Week in Google is brought to you by WordPress. Reach more customers when you build your business website on WordPress.com. Plans start at just $4 a month and get 15% off any new plan at WordPress.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we talk about the latest news from the Googleverse. Joining us from Austin, Texas, the host of Stacey on IoT. StaceyOnIoT.com. Stacey Higginbotham! I gotta give you your FIFA introduction. Stacey Higginbotham! Oh, God, I hurt myself. Hi, Stacey.
You need some cheer sound effects.
We also need Stacey's audio. Oh, there we go.
Sorry, hi. I was, the doorbell just rang, so there is barking in the background.
I love
trying
barking.
To spare y'all.
We want parts of real life, yeah.
You know what?
You're getting
That's actually really true, Jeff Jarvis. From the Craig Newmark School of Journalism.
The Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at CUNY. I'm very, very proud to say that we have just renamed our school thanks to an incredibly generous gift from my friend Craig Newmark, $20 million.
Wow.
To assure our independence.
So he makes billions putting newspapers out of business and kicks back a few crumbs.
So this has been driving the smart people nuts online because people repeat that trope. That idiocy. He didn't, A, I don't think he made billions. B, he didn't ruin newspapers. What ruined newspapers was the internet coming along and getting rid of the middlemen and their rapacious monopolistic pricing. So it was Monster and real estate agents and job agents and car dealers all went their own way. They didn't need the papers anymore. And we just stood back stupidly. So no, Craig didn't ruin newspapers. And Craig is doing a lot of good for journalism now, including Sporting CUNY. A wonderful institution.
That's nice. Does what happens to the Town Knight folks? Do they just slink away with their tails between their legs?
No. I run the Town Knight Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism. Okay, so here's my full title.
Yeah.
You ready?
Yeah. Oh, Lord.
Yeah. I haven't done this yet. Hello.
Hi.
I'm Jeff Jarvis, the Leonard Tow Professor of Journalistic Innovation and Director of the Tow Knight Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York.
Brought to you by Nike. Just do it.
Wow. I was on MSNBC today, and I really wanted them to put the lower third.
I was going to say, yeah, we saw you on MSNBC.
Would be like the lower two thirds. We'd get like to your nose.
I think you should make who was interviewing you on MSNBC.
That was Ali Velshine.
Oh, yeah, they should make Ali say the whole thing once, just once.
Yeah.
So you were there to talk about a huge story, which has just gotten huger, and I bet you already predicted this. The huge story broke yesterday when a judge cleared AT&T's $85 billion bid for Time Warner and said, no conditions, you're in different businesses, no big deal. The government had been seeking to stay this, although I have to say, it's all tarnished by the fact that there's some evidence the government didn't like it because the president doesn't like CNN.
Oh, considerable evidence. And he continued it from the podium in Singapore, calling CNN fake news to the CNN reporter's face. Yeah, it was a political vendetta. He had nothing against Disney and Fox, but everything against CNN.
Yeah. However,
this is still not a great deal for...
There were good and just reasons for blocking this.
But once that happened, that's the point Ali Velshi made on the air today, that once that happened, he said even people like himself and me who might have questioned this deal more, once that happened, we kind of said, nope.
Yeah.
It's got to go now because we can't allow that kind of political interference in speech.
That Trump will be gone in at most 6 years, and this is going to live forever. So,
yeah, yeah. I was willing to fall in line with Trump on this one.
Yeah.
There are a few things that I'm like, oh, yeah, I'd go for that. But this would have gone.
The thing is, Stacey, under the law as it stands, and thank goodness at least one third of government still does follow the law until it's taken over. It is a vertical. It's a defensible vertical merger.
Yeah, it's it's a meta concept, which the law probably doesn't contemplate.
Yeah, we might need to rewrite.
This is why we need law. To bring. We need to change antitrust law. We need to bring it into the 21st century. Jeff, did you disappear? Oh, okay. Suddenly you got so dark. It was like talking to a black screen.
Darker.
I was like, where did he go?
I think I'm here.
Am I here? I twig, therefore I am.
It doesn't matter. Most people are listening. So your voice is just as strong and clarion.
I keep getting darker there without doing anything. And the sun's not doing anything. But I can't win.
You're advocating for evil. That's the indication right there.
Ooh.
No.
So AT&T, of course, is a pipe company. They are
an internet service. Yes, they would hate for you to say that, but
that's what they are. They're an internet service provider. They're a common carrier. They're a phone company.
Roto-Rooter.
Do they own Roto-Rooter?
They are not a common carrier. As an internet provider, they have not.
But they are a phone company still. That's a common carrier. No, but I'm saying AT&T is a phone company for a significant number of people in this country. But as part of that, they also are a DSL provider to some and a fiber provider to others, as well as their phone. So they're both a common carrier and whatever.
And information technology. Information
technologies are, right.
Yeah.
What they get with Time Warner is HBO, CNN, TNT, a lot of pay TV stuff. But they don't. What they don't get
movie
is
studio,
movie studio, or Time TV magazine. Studio.
No. They don't get Time Inc. Time Inc. was sold to Meredith.
Time Inc. was sold way long ago.
It was shot off because it has cooties.
They do get Warner Brothers though. They do get the movie studio.
Yeah, they don't. Time Warner Cable, was sold sometime ago.
They don't get Spectrum.
Time Inc. was spun off. AOL, of course, was spun off. So this is basically the whole AOL Time Warner. This is the last gasp of it. It's dead now.
And actually, that's probably why the judge could clear this, because had they owned some of those other things, it wouldn't have been as clear.
Right, if they owned Time Warner Cable, right.
That'd be direct.
The closest analog is Comcast NBC Universal.
Yes.
It did go through with conditions.
This does bring up the other shoe that just dropped, because as I'm sure you noted on Ali Velshi's show this morning, Jeff, Comcast has been waiting to see what the judge decided before going forward with its bid for 21st Century Fox. And they, in fact, have just now upped their bid to.
Oh, how big is the bid?
$65
billion. Versus Disney's what?
$54 billion, I think.
And are they apples? Are they bidding for the same parts of Fox?
Well, it's up to Disney, I think. Yes. Yes, they are.
Yes.
It's up to Disney now to up its bid or back out.
What interests me is, and I'm going to be very partisan in what I'm about to say, part of what I fear in all this is how much control Rupert Murdoch keeps over brainwashing minds in America.
Because he keeps Fox News, but he loses Sky.
He keeps Fox News goes with, I think.
No, all right. The
News Corp is already separated off. He keeps that.
Yeah.
So that's the New York Post, the Wall Street Journal, all that.
They get the sports stuff. It's so complicated. The big issue is that the pipe companies, Comcast and AT&T, are buying increasing numbers of content companies. NBC is already owned by Comcast. AT&T will own CNN.
And are they taking on any debt to do this?
Oh, man, you're asking tough questions.
Comcast or AT&T?
Both, because that's what did in the newspaper business, right? All of the consolidation.
Comcast is an all-cash deal. It's a premium over Disney's all-stock deal.
Ah.
Are they taking any debt?
I'm looking for AT&T.
Because the debt's what kills you in these cases. I mean, in a sense, Leo, I could argue that this is the dinosaurs huddling together against the cold wind of the internet and Netflix and Amazon.
I'd agree with you, except that these, as pipe companies, these guys also are gatekeepers to the internet.
Yes.
And with the fall of net neutrality on Monday,
bingo.
There is a very scary confluence of factors that worry me a little bit. Not only a concentration information sources, but also a concentration of power.
And I would argue this. Let's see if this gives either of you palpitations.
Do you want me to answer your debt question before you get into here?
Let me first say this. So I can give you palpitations. In terms of companies that are too big that could do scary things that we're frightened of that are awful, I have a lot more faith in Google and Facebook than I do in Comcast and AT&T. I'm more scared of them than I am of
people. I think you're misguided on that. I think they're all just about as bad.
Oh, I didn't listen to you, Jeff. Well, who were you more scared of?
I'm more scared of, as usual, Stacey. Why did you change?
I was looking up debt.
You were doing work for me because I was too lazy. I'm more scared of Comcast and AT&T than I am of Google and Facebook. And all this attention is going to Google and Facebook as the big scary companies. Comcast and AT&T have far worse culture. I have far more power to do bad stuff, are ripping us off, have impact on speech that's greater. I agree with you.
They're the evil empire. The difference between them, Google, and Facebook is that Google and Facebook at least continue to pay lip service to fairness and equality and not being evil. AT&T, Comcast long ago gave up any pretense.
Amen. So, Stacey, what'd you find?
Okay. So, AT&T's deal does include – now I got to go back to it. I got distracted. See, this is the deal.
It worked, Jeff, it worked.
Their total debt load is $163 billion. After this deal, when they take on Time Warner's debt, it's going to be at $185 billion.
Wow.
But they say that debt to EBITDA ratio they're going for after the deal is 2.5x. So that's high, but that's not out of whack with the telco.
It's not unmanageable. Okay. Yeah.
So EBITDA is what?
Earnings before income, depreciation, and taxes.
So they're saying their debt to income ratio is 2-1.
Basically, their debt to net income is 2.5.
So that's not awful. I mean, if you own a home, your debt to income ratio is probably a little worse than
that. Well, but AT&T also has a lot of physical assets. Right. So, when we're talking about this sort of thing.
I'm sure they can make a strong case to their shareholders that this makes them more valuable and the revenues will go up to meet the debt. It's a risky thing to do. I mean, this is what almost brought down Clear Channel, the company I work for on the radio, and they only had $20 billion in debt, was that they borrowed a lot of money to buy radio stations. And even though they're very good cash flowing, it's hard to service $20 billion in debt. It's really hard to service $185 billion in debt.
AT&T can service $185 billion in debt. They're saying that they'll see $1 billion in annual they call it run rate cost synergies within 3 years of the deal. I'm not worried about that. What they're going to get is think about how these guys play today. So remember all of those fun franchise disagreement dramas that pop up every now and then with the cable guys and the ISPs, the cable guys. So people who own cable and they fight with the entertainment companies over how much they're going to pay to run their channels.
Mm-hmm.
So this gives AT&T, just like Comcast.
You never have those fights anymore.
Well, you have different leverage in those fights. The other thing is, like with the end of net neutrality, we could see the beginning of packages that zero rate or that even not just Advantage, but like, hey, you can have all of the AT&T channels on this for free. Just sign up for our broadband, our quad play,
The more zero rated content on AT&T and Comcast, the worse it is for independents like me, like Twit.
In
effect costs you to watch the independents when it doesn't cost you to watch the other guys. And that's
right.
That's
why we wanted net neutrality.
So, and I don't know if we're going to see this actually play out in net neutrality ways. So I don't know if we're going to see much advantaging on the actual packet flow for these things. I think what will be interesting is we might see advantaging against data caps. So both Comcast and AT&T have data caps. That's a little bit more subtle for people, but it's closer to what's happening on the mobile side, and the FCC has already said, yeah, okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
So that'll be an interesting thing to watch. Tom Wheeler's FCC was they were interested in bad behavior on data caps. I can't imagine Ajit Pai really giving a hoot whatsoever.
And no. Technically, by the way, FCC would still have to rule just because the judge gives the go-ahead. Although I did note that AT&T said, yeah, we're going to close this next week. So I don't think they anticipated any slowdowns from federal regulators.
The judge essentially told the DOJ, don't bother.
That's the DOJ, but the FCC technically could still weigh in. But I don't think
I doubt it.
So you said something very interesting, Jeff, and I wanted to kind of pursue this.
Note that in the history books. That's good.
You always say stuff that's interesting.
Yes,
I always give you credit for that. You're not always right, but sometimes you are. And in fact, Steve Case echoes this. He was asked by CNBC, because Steve Case was the AOL executive during the Time Warner AOL merger, right?
That's because of him. It's because of him. My FU money said FU to me. Yes.
They split into two companies after the merger, several years after the merger. It was a failure. Case warned AT&T, according to CNBC, against suffering the same fate. He said that really what's going on, echoing your statement, Jeff, AT&T and Time Warner and Fox and Comcast and others are really playing defense.
Playing defense, yes.
They're really worried about their position in the future compared to Facebook, Netflix, and Amazon. Yes. So what is the threat?
Well, Netflix pays for more original programming than any network ever.
$8 billion this year.
And Netflix and Amazon and Facebook and Google all have far more. Well, no, actually, your carrier does have a lot of data on you. They just don't know how the hell to use it.
I disagree. Well, so they're just using it not in as obvious a way, but I think
they're not using it in a smart way to give you what you want. They're not thinking in a customer centered way,
right?
To give you more relevance and more of what you want and sell that wisely. Stacey?
So the carriers for a while weren't allowed to use all the data they had. They solved that problem fairly recently in the scheme of things. But I will say there is very much a telco mindset, an ISP mindset, we'll call it, versus an innovation mindset.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
These guys want to control everything. They want to run it through their own walled garden, and they really don't want to be a commodity service. They don't want to be a dumb pipe. And that every decision they make is driven by fear of that and an attempt to control and consolidate as much power as they can so they can keep their pipe super valuable opposed to a commodity.
You don't think this is about, as they asserted, is diversification, putting foot in the digital waters. You think it's more about consolidation and control.
I think having those assets gives them a lot of leeway to negotiate. It gives them content that they can actually push to users and kind of keep them locked in. So yes to both. I don't think it's an either or. But I will say that of all of the ISPs, the best one and the most innovative, actually, and the one to watch is also probably the most evil, which is Comcast. And when they bought NBCU, it made a ton of sense. Just like AT&T doing this today makes a ton of sense. We all knew video was going to go to the internet. Nobody was like, oh, that's not going to happen. Even the cable providers knew. So getting that content in helps preserve your quad play or your triple play.
Play or your septuple like, play.
I mean, Comcast, if you think about it, they're actually up to like a quintuple play because they've got broadband. They're starting wireless. They've got
phone,
and home security now.
Right.
Like so home security service, and that's a quintuple play.
Quintuple play.
So
now, if you're a pipe company and net neutrality is gone, wouldn't it make more sense to put all that money into strengthening your position as the carrier?
This is human behavior you got to worry about, too. You're not just worrying about the... you don't want to be a dumb pipe. That's just where
you don't want to be a dumb pipe. Why not?
They don't want to be a commodity.
But if you're a dumb pipe and there's no net neutrality rules, which means you're also a gatekeeper, you're not that dumb.
Because what's going to happen is wireless is going to kill your monopoly.
Right.
So that's not a strong monopoly.
So here's the
actually
go ahead.
Go on, Jeff.
No, you go. I was going to start a parlor game. I'll start in a minute. You go.
Okay. So we also have to think about 5G, which is coming down the pipe. And I'm not saying this in some BS-y kind of 5G will save the world thing. I'm talking about specifically fixed wireless delivered via Facebook and Google, which they are both investing in. So if you look at that, these guys are saying, the telcos are like, holy cow, the one thing I've got, well, two things I've got is a kick butt wireless network, and I have fiber in the ground, basically. These guys are coming through and saying, hey, we're going to do that last mile fiber, which means you can have the rings, and there are other companies building rings. Facebook has their own fiber. So this is where it's getting interesting. So diversification matters too, because they're going to need some more money. Their networks are not going to be monopolies, possibly for much longer everywhere else.
I see a content monopoly also shattering, though. They're very worried about YouTube. Last night I had an epiphany. I went home, and instead of watching TV, I watched Microsoft's streaming gaming service, their competitor to Twitch, which is owned by Amazon, called Mixer. And I watched the Fortnite Pro-Am, which was professional esports gamers. It was very exciting. They were playing Fortnite. It was very exciting. There was a $3 million purse. The winning team won, but it was for charity, which is even more interesting. The winning team won $1 million for their charity. It's these two young guys.
What game were they playing?
Fortnite, which is
Fortnite.
Very popular game right now.
Yeah, yeah.
So there you have that. You've got Microsoft Mixer coming on strong. I mean, there's all these channels. We're on it now, by the way. There's Amazon's Twitch. We're also on that. There's YouTube. We're also on that. Leo isn't that dumb. those three, to me, and then I look at people under 25, they're not going home and watching NBC. They're not watching Two and a Half Men. They're watching YouTube and Twitch and Mixer, and they're playing those games. And I, you know, it's interesting because I'm watching it, and part of the epiphany was how it's presented, which from my old media eye looks very kind of amateurish. Just as I'm sure Jeff, to a newspaper man, blogs looked pretty damn amateurish. Then I realized
I is one.
Yeah, well, now you are one. But I realized, and now I'm new media. But I realized that the standards that we have in old media are very different from what a 20-year-old expects.
Not just standard, but the motif, the voice, the style.
All of that stuff.
I'm rereading. McLuhan.
McLuhan.
Understanding media.
Is he relevant in today's media environment?
Oh, Jesus. It's just amazing. And I'm not going to do him justice, so I'm not going to try to summarize. But his observations, and he was so much ahead of, he thought that electric media, TV, radio, and such, were going to do more than they were. He was anticipating.
Called television a hot medium and radio a cool medium, right?
Yeah, and I always get confused, but I still can't get my head
he
around.
He also said the only thing I remember is the medium is the message.
Right. So he argues that the form is everything. We tend to look, we miss the frame by looking at the picture. And so it's absolutely fascinating how, I mean, it's a media analysis of all life. He argues that media is an extension of our bodies and our neural systems, right? Well,
he was right on. Yet. That's exactly what's happened.
Oh, it's very much so. And he considers, you know, he's fascinating because it's very academic. He considers the wheel a medium. And steam power and medium, and you get them going on Gutenberg and on the typewriter, the impact of the typewriter on the way people think. You know, from when I went from a typewriter to a computer and how it changed how I wrote completely, how I thought. That's where we are.
Is that you, Jeff?
No, that's me. So. I'm not on fire.
Is your smoke alarm going off?
Yes.
Get the hell out of there!
No, it's okay. It's the air conditioning, but sorry.
I like it. Everybody listening at home ran to their smoke alarms. Some people are out of the house already.
Here's the parlor game I want to play. So, I'll start the bidding here. So, I think Netflix could now, part of what this decision does too is it opens up less antitrust scrutiny of other kinds of deals that could occur.
See, I would think Netflix is now in peril. Because they're a content company, but they don't own the pipes. And
these pipe guys are
getting very strong.
Do they turn
around?
Hold
on. I want to play the parlor game.
So do they buy? Does Netflix buy CBS? Does Google buy Netflix?
Who's in play? So ABC is owned by
Disney.
By Disney. CBS
is way in play because CBS and Viacom split up, and there's efforts in Viacom to bring CBS back in. CBS is resisting, and so each one is in play.
What would the value of Netflix buying CBS be?
On one hand, it's why the hell would we go buy in the past and buy that? On the other hand, it's distribution of a sort.
Yeah, they need distribution, but I don't think broadcast is the right way to
do it. I don't think they care about broadcast distribution. What they need is they need internet. So they would do well to help fund some sort of shared internet infrastructure.
There you go. Netflix.
So, yeah.
Here's a TechCrunch article. Netflix and Alphabet will need to become ISPs fast. This is in response to net neutrality, but I think it also is in response to all of this. Everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now,
does Google Fiber start back up?
Right. This guy's saying it will. Now, I don't know if Google Fiber will actually start back up in the iteration that it's had. I really think it's too expensive to do last mile. So doing fiber and Google lays, like in Austin, they laid all of their metro fiber ring down. They didn't use anybody else's. And that's very expensive.
Yeah, they had to stop
doing
that.
If they do that in other places and they rely on like 5G, to do everything
I think that's
else,
why wired. I think you're right. Wireless is obviously the only way you can, if you're not an incumbent, you can play.
Now, but you have to own your backhaul. If you're going to be if you're going to use fixed wireless at some point in time, you have to get back on the internet. Now, those fiber rings, Google has fiber, so they could actually do it as opposed to like T-Mobile today. Poor T-Mobile, you know. They can do everything they want on their radio network, but when they get to their towers, they're still paying Verizon and AT&T for backhaul.
So there used to be the story that there's all this dark fiber in the United States.
It's like deep state.
And is it available? Who owns all this dark fiber? Is it the incumbents? Is it Sprint?
No, it's a lot of different companies. So cities own dark fiber. Uh-huh. Sometimes they can't use it because the incumbents have written legislation to make it difficult. Random players. I mean, the dark fiber, though, the thing about fiber is you can have lots of dark fiber, but if it's not on a route that needs to be accessed, it's not going to be worth it turning on. And that's so, you know, we're like, oh, dark fiber will save us. But it actually really matters where the fiber is. And a lot of our dark fiber is between major metro areas, which is not.
Okay. So, but Google has the resources to acquire the dark fiber it needs for interconnects, to build rings where it needs to build rings, and to set up wireless I wonder why
they will only do this if AT&T and Verizon make it necessary. So Google, and you can actually see this, Google launched Google Fiber in an era where the cable providers were implementing bandwidth caps. They were charging incredible prices for gigabit networks. Do you remember when a gigabit network was like $300 a month or even $500 a month? So what happened is when they launched that, they actually got pricing down tremendously, plus boosted the base broadband speeds that people would accept. So when they launched free broadband, I think at 10 gigabits or 5 or 10 megabits per second, that actually boosted because Comcast was doing a free broadband program at a much lower data rate. So they boosted their free program to meet Google's program. So when Google did this, they actually had a huge impact on pricing. Like AT&T came into Austin at $70.
Right.
Your gigabit Ethernet or your gigabit service now in Austin from AT&T is about double that. So what's happening is Google's stagnated and the cable guys were like, and the ISPs were like, oh, we're back to raising prices. So until it gets too untenable again and they start implementing crappy policies, which they might because that's what they do, Google doesn't actually – it's better for Google to work with them than it is to actually build a network because that's one of the more expensive things you can do with your money.
Good parlor game, Jeff.
Yeah, so I still want to so let's try to do some matchups. Yeah, let's do some matchups, right? Does somebody buy Netflix or does Netflix buy somebody? What could Google buy? Apple, we keep on forgetting about. Apple has gazillions of cash, is getting into content. Does Apple buy Netflix?
And Apple has a really interesting vertical content.
Apple's always said, and I think I credit them with this because they've been very slow to spend their hundreds of billions of dollars in cash. They've always, and that which is bad, by the way, now repatriated, so they could buy Netflix with it.
Mm-hmm.
They've always said that we don't, you know, there's only a few reasons why you buy a company. Actually, it was Ben Thompson observed this, but I think he's accurate. There's only a few, or maybe it was, well, anyway, whoever observed it. There's only a few reasons you buy a company. One, to acquire customers. Apple doesn't need to do that for sure. Acquire technology. Apple does do that, but they do small acquisitions. But what you want to be very careful about is trying to merge corporate cultures that are diverse. And I think Apple is very reluctant to acquire anything large because it has a very distinct corporate culture and it doesn't want to have to try to merge that with anybody else's corporate culture. So I think Apple is not, I mean, Apple, we've always said, could buy the music industry. I mean, the whole music mm-hmm. industry, if they wanted to.
Yep.
The whole music industry. But
All of it.
But that's not really what they're interested in. And so they're very, very conservative with their acquisitions. I think
so
they'd only Amazon? Do that if they saw there was a defensive need or a real aggressive opportunity. I don't think in either case. Now, Bezos is another question. That's
Bezos doesn't, because he hasn't gone for profit. He doesn't have a lot of cash, right?
Yeah.
He has equity that's worth a fortune. So
I
does he buy Netflix?
I think you would actually see them create some sort of shared infrastructure. I really do. And I think
Amazon relies on bandwidth too, don't they?
Yeah, they rely tremendously
Ever
on bandwidth.
More.
And they get hugely upset when when their services don't work because of crappy bandwidth. But what I see, because again, way back in like 2008, the FCC actually did a nationwide broadband plan. And the cost of putting broadband like everywhere via fiber, though, was multiple billions. I mean, tens of billions of dollars. So you're not going to see that kind of effort, I think, ever. What I think you would see is these guys come together, create a shared infrastructure, and use that to squeeze the telcos. Because again, they still want to do business with them. Verizon, AT&T, Comcast, they still own the networks that Google's trying to run their services over. So they can't just go all out to war. And
this is very much Game of Thrones going on right now.
Yeah.
You have a number of fiefdoms all vying to control it. And it's a very interesting chess game because you're right. They can't outright fight each other. They need to, you know, the alliances need to form and break up, and people have to. This is a very interesting chess game. I wouldn't keep Jeff Bezos out of this one. I would, if I had to put money on anybody, I would put money on him. Certainly not AT&T or Comcast. Although Comcast is really a behemoth now. You know, AT&T owns DirecTV.
Who's the third largest ISP now?
Verizon. I can actually answer this question for you. Hold on. Do you want it to be a telco or just in general?
That's interesting.
That's an interesting question. I want cable.
In cable? Okay. Give me 2 seconds.
So AT&T, Comcast, Time Warner, cable. Well, Time Warner has been taken over. So hold on.
All right. Broadband rankings.
Charter is the second largest. Oh.
Really? No way.
That's a big shift. Charter did not.
And deal with Comcast. What?
Oh, Spectrum?
Because they bought the pieces of...
They bought Spectrum.
Time Warner.
They bought Spectrum.
Oh, you're right. Okay, so yeah,
so Comcast
has 26 million.
Charter, Spectrum.
AT&T.
Charter's got to have tons of debt. They can't buy anything. AT&T. So, all right. Yeah. So does Amazon buy Charter? Does
Amazon
Apple
doesn't
buy Charter?
Want that.
Amazon is going to face this as an issue, though. Because
they've already dealt with this as an issue. I just don't, these guys have historically, they're not going to get into the networking business unless they absolutely have to, and it affects their
cost of
goods
sold. There's incentive because of Amazon Web Services.
No, I know there's incentive, but again, right now, they're not dumb. They can build all of this infrastructure on top and create value there. And one of the reasons they can do that is because they've created an open infrastructure, like they've created a true platform where the ISPs were like, no, our platform will only be for us. So that's just, that's on the ISPs. I feel no shame. I feel no pity.
So
for
what,
them.
All right. So looking out into the future, the smart thing to do, short term, people might kind of try to occupy the current internet, but the smart thing to do would be to build a wireless internet. And let's go beyond wireless. Let's go beyond 5G. Cause you're right. You got a backhaul issue. What if we did space-based internet? What if we did satellite internet?
Latency is going to kill you. I have to, now I'm all very excited about satellite and like internet. It depends on which band you're in. That depends on how much, how many megahertz.
Rolling Stones, the Beatles.
No, sorry. Which when you start talking about doing anything in wireless, you have to think about the amount. So they measure spectrum in megahertz and they allocate it in chunks that are different bands. So the number, you can only cram so many bits per hertz. So you can only like that. We're technologically limited in that. That's Shannon's kind of law. That's Shannon's law. So you can't go infinite without a huge technological breakthrough. So LTE was a breakthrough over 3G. 5G is less of a breakthrough in terms of being able to cram more information into every hertz of spectrum. So you're going to hit limits there. So you can't do things like 8K television unless you especially can't do it if you have lots and lots of little players, because they're going to get lots and lots of little chunks.
Well, that's where satellite succeeds, because latency doesn't matter in one-way television broadcasting. And you can put up enough. How many satellites is SpaceX planning to put up? Hundreds, right? Of low Earth orbit.
Yes.
So there's low latency.
Latency.
Lower, but again, it doesn't matter for if it's 8K TV, latency is not an issue at all.
Well, let's see how many bands we have in the lower Earth orbit band.
We just can't use it for the show.
It doesn't help us. Well, no. Latency is not a problem for us either. Latency is a problem for
literally,
gaming, for Skype.
Literally the three of us.
Skype, yeah.
Yeah. It's...
Mm-hmm. All right. Downlink, how big are your channels? Oh, okay.
So RF 2020 says that Elon Musk wants to put up more than 4,000 satellites. See, Elon's looking at the long game here.
So, and that's actually, so the tinier, the more satellites you have, the more it's like having more cell towers. So you can actually divide by the number of users that are trying to pull downlink it up.
Are we
so
running out of real estate for these things?
I guess space is a big place, Jeff.
Physical real estate or RF real estate?
No, physical. Running into each other.
No, I think we're all right there.
We're going to do so much with like swarming algorithms, and they'll just like magically pass each other. But we are sending a lot of junk into space.
So Elon wants to put up 12,000 satellites, 4,000 of them for the backhaul, 8,000 of them for direct to users. 12,000.
Jesus.
Oh,
now,
how many
can he put in one payload?
I don't know, but it's interesting that both Bezos and Musk are looking at space.
Well, that's because they've got a rocket launching program. I mean, if you have a hammer
launching program.
No, he's saying the reverse, Stacey. That's why.
Well, I know, but he's got the rocket launching program for
I wouldn't put it past Mars, either Elon or Bezos to have other plans and say something about Mars when that they really want to do is take over the internet. I wouldn't put it past either one of them.
That's true.
I think they're smart enough to be looking at. I mean, look, if we figured this out, they must have.
But y'all, satellite is tough. And I say this having written for 15 years about satellite. Yeah. Everyone wants, there's so much challenge there that is really deep and nerdy and boring, but so important. So you've got to deal with
impossible.
The issue.
I mean, if you want to say challenge, living on Mars is kind of a challenge too.
Well, and we're not there yet.
No,
but Stacey's right, because the leap from fiber to the home to fixed wireless itself is big, right? Fixed wireless is not as good as fiber to the home, which is part of Susan Crawford's argument against the Comcast NBCU. Merger. Everybody said, well, it's okay. We'll get 5G. It'll be okay. She says, no, it's not ever going to be what fiber to the home is. And satellite's never going to be what fixed wireless is.
Right.
Right?
That's true.
Yes, that is true.
If you had your choice, you'd want fiber.
I mean, don't you remember, was it Snow Crash where they were like, you know, they were all running around having their fun on their wireless network, but when they really wanted to do something serious, they had to go to the wired network because there just wasn't enough capacity. I know that's a fiction, but it's actually based in physics.
I always, you know, given the choice, I'm always going to bet on physics. I think it's a very interesting, you know, we're obviously
satellite needs, again, backhaul's going to bite you in the butt here, because to direct to satellite, you need some sort of massive battery powered big transmitter and receiver on your handset if you want to do it on handset. What's more likely is you're going to do satellite to some sort of base station, either consumer premise equipment or a tower-like infrastructure. So you're still going to need that backhaul. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Did I lose
but
you
only have to buy a few of those compared to...
No, it depends on how much capacity you need. It depends on all kinds of things. I mean, like, you don't just have to have a few. It depends on the nature of your backhaul if you're going to do...
Yeah, fewer than you would if you wanted to do terrestrial.
You wouldn't have to do it to the premise, but you would have to have... I mean, I guess you could do satellite... Let's see. Satellite to CPE to Wi-Fi or to 5G wireless.
Sorry, you don't have to design the network. We don't have to get that granular.
Can you get the whiteboard out?
We don't have to design it.
I'm like sitting here going, who do I need to call to test the physics here?
Is it possible?
I don't actually know.
I wonder, so the parlor game continues, and I think it's a good parlor game of what the moves, what the next moves are over the next year or two. But at least for now, is this not bad for consumers, Jeff?
Well, that was the argument I had on TV today, and everybody's saying prices are going to go down. I don't think so. I think they're going to go up. But that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with antitrust. It's just that the mass media, you've heard me this before, the mass media ad-supported business model is suffering unto dying. Free content supported by advertising will become junkier and junkier, broadcast TV. And so I think the reason prices are going to go up is because you're going to find more and more stuff going behind walls.
And people are willing to pay it. I mean, look at we're just talking about shows on HBO and Netflix.
Yeah. And there aren't that many competitors. Hulu, you know, so you have Amazon, you have Netflix, you have HBO, Showtime. Hulu is owned by the media companies. So
That ownership will change significantly if Comcast buys 21st Century. They will have a 60% controlling share of Hulu.
Yes, which is part of the reason they want it. And so there's actually a fairly limited number of competitors. Now, unless you consider next week I'll be at VidCon, you know, 10,000 18-year-old boys and girls making shows that have sizable audiences that aren't part of this equation at all. In terms of a huge attention market and people watching, you know, game tournaments like you're talking about, not part of this calculation at all.
This has always been a problem for advertisers is reaching the 18 to 25 year old, and it's only gotten worse.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the advertising market, which I guess is what's financing all of this. Is that right? If everything goes behind a paywall, then advertising doesn't matter anymore, right?
Yeah, advertising, pardon me for getting into this, but this is where GDPR comes in too, is that the less you can target, the more it's going to be just mass volume.
Which is awesome for Twitter. It's awesome for us because we don't target. And God, you know, Lisa got off the phone today with
you. You do target. You are the essence of targeting.
Well, only because our programming is niche programming.
But we don't
compete well against Facebook and Google, where you can say to Google, I'd want 18 to 24 year olds to live in Hyannisport. You can't do that with us. And there are advertisers. She just got off the phone with a big company that won't buy ads because we won't give them a redirect so they can see who downloads the stuff. We won't give them tracking cookies because this is all stuff they want, and they can get from Facebook and Google. And so
you tell me who that is. I'll go talk to them. I'll set them straight.
They're not too far from you. But it's, I think it's fascinating. And we're kind of barely keeping our head above water at this point because Google and Facebook are eating so much of the digital ad spend because of that targeting. Now, I'm hoping GDPR changes that equation. I really am. But it's very interesting.
GDPR is going to extend the life of stupid mass media.
And yet aren't, brands moving off. I heard a few years ago, Procter & Gamble moved off of Facebook and back to their big TV buys.
Because of what they do. They give you something you don't have a relationship with, really. Right?
What
they
are
give
you talking you- about? I have a relationship with my Charmin
and your Downy
and my Tide.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. You have a brand, very strong brand relationship, but that's why branding advertising is what they want.
That's what they're just branding advertising. Yeah. And it's product introduction, which you're only ever going to be able to do through non-targeted.
And we're caught as a lot of small networks and early cable channels and things are caught in this bad space where ultimately you'd love to be a brand advertising buy. But nobody's going to buy podcasting as a brand advertising. They always want direct response. They always going to want to measure it somehow. And so we're kind of caught somewhere between
lots of
deep
brand.
Tracking, direct response, and branding. But what you'd like is the branding buy.
So I was talking to a bunch.
Sorry.
Go ahead. Well, I have this community of practice. Go ahead, Stacey. You first.
Never mind. Go.
Sorry.
We don't want to interrupt Stacey.
No, you.
We want Stacey to talk.
You go, Stacey.
No, I was just going to say, I get a lot of brand advertising some brand advertising for people who are target. But again, it's kind of niche brand advertising.
Do they not always, though, want a offer code or something?
Nope.
So you'll get advertisements for a company and they say, just go to our website. Then not go to our website / Stacey and IoT.
And I don't know if it's because they're less sophisticated or but they're all happy. I mean, so. Well,
notice that the Twit ads that don't have a direct URL are very few.
Yes, I have noticed that. And I offer
you
people,
get paid
a lot of them are just
on
we never
percentage do see, basis?
No, and one of the things I said when we started Twitter is, so there's two ways you can sell advertising in this kind of medium. Cost per impression, CPM, or cost per lead or click, and action, CPA, and we've never done cost per action ad buys. Wait a minute, we did one once, Netflix, and it was more an experiment to see what else. Netflix would never pay CPM. CPM means they just like regular TV advertising, they pay for the number of eyeballs. They wanted cost per acquisition. And but it was like $50 per acquisition. So we said, all right, we'll try it. It did not work well. I always wanted to see, I felt like if cost per acquisition devalues your product, in my opinion, because you're not monetizing people who heard about you, but then didn't click the link or whatever. You really want to monetize the impressions, I think.
Well, this is the discussion we've had before, but I have this community practice I started at CUNY with my colleagues there for commerce in news media. And it's working pretty well. Now this is selling stuff off of Amazon. This is doing deals for heavy blankets. This is fairly straightforward, but it's something we've never done in news media. And as I've discussed in the past, it needs more trust. You know, throwing Taboola ads in your page, you're obviously telling your readers you really don't give a damn about
them. Yeah, we'd never
do that. If you're saying this is the best deal of the day, I, Stacey Higginbotham, know the best Wi-Fi router that's not going to rip you off. I, Leo Laporte, know the 10 best. You know, you become a wire cutter, and you got to put some investment in that, and you got to know that.
That's why wire cutter is so valuable, by the way.
Yeah, it is, and
they don't. Does the wire cutter do advertising? I don't think they do.
They don't really now know because it competes.
Is it affiliate links? How do they monetize?
It's both affiliate links. They will put up, so they're part of the group. They will put up the best. They pick the best product. Then they put up the best links to those products.
And that's
and it's
the
not always the cheapest.
Right.
It's not always the cheapest because it depends on what their users prefer. And a lot of users always prefer Amazon. And Amazon, the interesting thing is Amazon is as closed and secretive as with this as with anything, but they clearly value this channel.
So it's the Amazon affiliate fees that makes that make them money. By the way, the New York Times owns the Wirecutter now.
So. Owns Wirecutter.
Yes. Yeah.
So when it was bought, the rumors were that it was netting about $10 million a year. And you can gross that up. One major online pure play publication I know of is bringing in $100 million a year in gross, not net, gross sales. Gawker reportedly, Gawker reportedly, what it was last year of his life as Gawker, was grossing $250 million in merchandise sales.
And the reason gross is an interesting number is because you have to consider how much it costs them to generate that revenue. And so you subtract it from the revenue. It's not their profit. And so something like the Wirecutter, which has a lot, they have high costs, I guarantee you, because they have a lot of people.
But it's an editorial cost.
But that counts against your gross, believe me.
Of course it does. Of course
trust
it does.
Me, I know all about that
world,
part.
we're used to that kind of content cost, right. As are you. So that's how we're calculating. It's just a different kind of advertising in the end.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, but it's also a lower dollar advertising, I would have think, but maybe not.
Oh, yeah. But you're not competing for the damned CPM, RFPs. There's a different relationship with your audience, one of trust.
It's very good from the audience's point of view.
Both of you should be experimenting, I believe, with commerce. See what it's like. So it's different, Leo, because one thing I was saying to the group, I said, my friend Leo Laporte, right? What happens on the Twit network is that every new direct response company comes along and says, well, I'm going to try this out on the podcasts. Casper, Harry's, Wink, all these companies that you've helped launch, because you are a great platform for seeing what people respond to at a low cost and low risk. They're willing to pay the CPM just because it's not that high. It's a small audience. They get a lot of data back, and you're launching all these companies, and then they leave you.
Yeah.
So how do you keep ongoing value? How do you keep
as soon as they get to a certain size, they start buying TV ads.
And they go on TV. Right. And they're hugely expensive. Why don't you keep on selling those things?
We try.
In a different way.
We try. No, because we have no way to do affiliate links. That's the difference between a podcast and a website. I mean, we have an affiliate link program, but we don't make much money on it.
Yeah. Well, I still think. And Stacey, you could rake it. I would follow.
So we are launching an affiliate link effort that is coming very soon. The challenge for me as a journalist, old school journalist, is
yeah, true.
Is how we talk to our readers about it. So do I. And this is just in the site. This isn't for the podcast. So how do I give them, some people give you the option of like, here's the affiliate link and here's a non-affiliate link for people who really hate that.
Why would somebody not want to do an affiliate link?
I don't know. But
I can understand people might say, oh, you're not going to recommend the best product, just the one that makes you the most affiliate money. That's why you
have
to.
I would never do that.
Of course you wouldn't. But that's why you have to disclose, and that's why you build a trust relationship. And I know there are people who say, oh, I remember when it was revealed that Pinterest was using affiliate links. People were up in arms like, well, it doesn't cost you anything.
Right.
I don't really understand it. But so I think you just disclosed, Stacey. You say this is how we make money through affiliate links. If you click this link, we'll be making a few bucks. Thank you for your support.
And the other great thing that Wirecutter does is they had a case of some kind of coffee maker thing, whatever. And they recommended the 32-ounce whatever. And the audience came back and said, no, you're wrong. That one has a problem. You actually should recommend the 18-ounce because that's better for these reasons. And Wirecutter said, oh, you're right. So we recommend the 18. So it's not you can have a back and forth. Because the thing about both you guys is that you have really smart audiences that use this stuff. Too, and that can keep you honest and keep improving the recommendations. I mean, I just think it's a little spin-off thing. Because Leo, the point is, yeah, I think you're right. In your normal flow of your media, no, but you could start a side brand that is Leo recommends.
Oh, we've always thought about that. We actually did for a while do that. I'm writing
the
this.
Market's
I'm,
changed, I think.
Jeff, I'm writing this business model into the ground. I'm going in with this business model. I'm too old to change. I like this business model. But Stacy's a young girl, so
Stacy, I would buy an IoT thing from you, and I would pay more.
You're more in a position to do that, frankly, than I am. Absolutely.
Right. We do have reviews and that sort of thing. So yes, it makes total sense, which is why we're going to do it. We're just trying to figure out the right way.
We did a review show kind of with that idea in mind, but it never. Our audience they don't like that kind of stuff.
Your audience is my audience too. So
yay, go spend thanks, your money Leo. At Stacy on IoT. That's where you should spend your money.
But
we love I really love our model because we can we pick advertisers we like. I talk about them. It's a relationship thing, you know. And I have a relationship with the audience. We talk about it, and I think it's something that's good for the audience. I love this model. If it's not, you know, if an advertiser says, no, yeah, but we've got to track and we've got to do this and that, fine. Then go. Basically, Lisa this morning told that company, okay, fine, go somewhere else. We don't.
But I was telling these media people about you, right, and saying that you do reject advertisers because they're not relevant to your audience or because you don't like them.
Yeah, well, That's trust, yeah.
Yeah, that's trust.
Yeah. I mean, originally I wanted to make this a paywall. No, seriously, from day one.
No, Web 8716. Leo basically retired.
I think people think I'm retired.
You do travel the world a lot, but you do show up a lot, too.
I get vacation time, just like any other schmuck.
I don't get any vacation time. Do you get vacation time, Stacey?
No, I actually built it into my contract for this year. By contract, I mean with Andrew.
With who?
And I was like, look, I am not working that last week between Christmas. I was like, there will be no products. Do not sell ads.
Good. You have to negotiate that with your husband. I have to negotiate that with my wife. Exactly.
Yeah.
The other, a couple of years ago, I said, honey, can I go on, can I get 3 weeks of vacation a year? And I thought she was going to say, absolutely not. And she said, yeah, of course.
Aw. Do you have to go with her?
I choose to go with her.
Stacy.
I love her.
What are you doing, Stacy?
And I would.
I'm going to get a nasty gram for this.
Yeah, you're causing trouble.
I want to go with her. Are you kidding? I would hate going somewhere because the whole time I'd be going, hey, Lisa, look. Oh. Hey, look at that, Lisa. Oh. No, I have to go with her. I have to have somebody to point things to.
If you can spend 3 weeks on a small cruise ship with somebody, you know you're in love.
Oh, yeah. Lisa and I travel better than we do work. It's hard. It's very stressful working together. And it's stressful for her more than it is for me because I don't really work. But it's hard. And when we're on vacation, we're like lovebirds. It's much easier. We got not a care in the world.
Aww.
By the way, I do.
Well, the sun has come out here, and I'm
wow!
I'm,
what
I'm
happened? Holy
I'm
cow!
Melting.
That fireball in the sky really is doing a deal on you. You better go to VidCon quick. No sun there. It was funny. As I said, I was watching the Pro-Am yesterday. It was outside in Los Angeles at some stadium, and Justine asks one of the pro players, "How's it feel to be playing outside?" And he goes, "The sun." There also the guy who the team that won the $1 million, one of them was wearing a marshmallow the whole time.
Oh, what? Marshmallow. That's his name.
You know him?
He's a gamer.
Yeah, he's very
I don't know him.
He Marshmallow and Ninja won.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. He's like Deadmau5. Oh, it's solo instead of Deadmau5 is just DJing. This guy's playing Fortnite with a marshmallow on his head.
Is it the singer too? Is he the same marshmallow? Is it the same person?
I don't know. Here, let me show you a picture of him. See if you recognize him. That's Ninja on the left of the blue hair. You know this? How do you know this, Carson?
Oh yeah, he
plays with that head on.
Yeah. Oh wow. That's
and he wins. Not just plays. He wins. And look, that's the trophy.
Did they win together or something?
Yeah, it was a team.
Team, okay.
They won $1 million for their charity. A million schmackers.
Who was the money from?
That's a really good question. Probably Epic Games, the makers of Fortnite. And that, Jesus. By the way, I told you last week, they make $1.5 million a day on iOS garbage.
Right.
So they gave half.
Oh, yeah, Marshall. It is the DJ. Okay, sorry.
Oh, he's a DJ.
Thank you, chat room. He's the DJ Marshmallow. He sings the song. God, I can't.
You're
hear
kidding.
It
he's
head.
A DJ and a Fortnite champion?
Yeah, Fortnite
he
is not.
He donated.
Leo, you act like these are two like he's Leonardo da Vinci and Michelangelo.
Yes. Dude, you are showing your age. And by the way, he gave, you'll be happy to hear, $500,000 to the Alzheimer's Association.
Oh.
My future life thanks you, yes.
Yes. I'm like, I will appreciate that, actually.
If you ever remember it.
My daughter will appreciate that.
Exactly. I don't know what Ninja gave his money to, but that's kind of amazing. What?
Kevin Toefel is telling me he's Daft Puff.
Daft Puff. I love that guy. Oh, I didn't know it was Daft Puff. Daft Puff. That's hysterical. Nice one, Kevin. Nice one.
Okay.
Yeah, it was fun watching them play.
So
we don't know. It's like Deadmau5. He wants to take the night off. He just gives the head to somebody else. We don't know. What did Ninja give his money to? That's what I want to know. Well,
your chat room knows a lot more about this than you do, Leo. They're telling us it's a celebrity tournament where the celeb was paired with a pro player.
Oh, I get it. So it was. It was the pro-am. So Marshmello, the celebrity. Uh-huh. Yeah, because Ninja really probably did a lot of the work, right? Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Ninja has... The hair, that's what color my hair fades to if I don't keep it touched up.
Ninja's got the blue.
I appreciate that.
He got the blue hair. Does Ninja get to keep the money and the celebrity gives the money away? Maybe. I don't know.
I was thinking about color.
Celebrity
my
has.
Hair.
You should, Jeff. White hair.
Because it's already bleached, right?
Yeah. It totally already, would color, it would carry color very well.
I think a 63-year-old man with colored hair would be a little weird.
I am a 40-year-old woman with colored hair.
Or we could talk Leo into doing it. Leo, if you were going to pick color for your hair, what would it be?
I like my color.
Remember when we used to talk
Chad
about cheese?
We used to go at Chipotle and queso. So Ninja what tweets, else? You want to know the struggles of streaming over other jobs? I left my Twitch channel for less than 48 hours and lost 40,000 subscribers.
Jesus.
That's the other side of this, by the way. And I was talking about this on KFI the other actually, I taped it this morning, but it'll be running next week. Is that being a celebrity in this new media is you have the lifespan of a mayfly. It's
very stressful.
It's few. They work really hard. In fact, there was a story just the other day about how many of these YouTube stars are just quitting because they're just exhausted. They work really hard. They don't make as much money as they ought to for 80-hour weeks. And
or
then,
like the ones we've seen, or the pressure is so great to become more outrageous, they go overboard.
They become like Logan Paul. Now, when you go to VidCon, I'm curious, do you see each year a new crop of stars?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure.
So there's quite a bit of turnover. Is there anybody, is there a Tony Bennett of the YouTube celebrity, somebody who's had a long career? PewDiePie? No.
Who did Beam? What's his name? Casey Neistat.
Casey Neistat. Nice guy.
What are the two brothers that make the...
John and Hank Green.
Oh, yeah. They created VidCon. Yeah.
There's Shawn Mendes, who became a pop star from his Vine career.
Well, that's the thing. I think a lot of these guys hope that they, or gals can hope, to make the transition to mainstream media where you could conceivably have a career. I feel like it's a... It's a meat grinder for the talent.
It is. It's amazing too. The number of because this year for the first time my daughter can't go with me because she's got a job.
You want mine?
But
I bet she'd love to go, wouldn't she?
Yeah,
she'd go.
I'm telling you, Stacey, it's a thing you do. You really, it's a joy. It's an amazing conference, and your daughter would go crazy. Yes, it would be a great mother daughter thing to do. I'm telling you this. Without you, will thank me. It's amazing. But they do raffle, they do drawings, and you get for the registration, you get three or four, I would call them signings, but of course nobody signs anything anymore because McLuhan says it's dead. But selfie opportunities.
That's what you do now. Instead of autographs, you do selfies.
The meet and greet. Yeah. And it's phenomenal how many there are, which is to say how many people have an audience sufficient to want to sign up and wait in line to be able to do that. It's
so Casey, it's Casey Neistat, who, by the way, sold Beam to CNN for...
And then failed there.
Failed.
CNN failed with it, so he's back on his own.
But he's got his money. I doubt he gave the money back. 3.1 million followers on Instagram.
Yeah.
And the link goes to shopcaseyneistat.com, where he's got merch. Well, not a lot of merch.
He's CNN minus N.
Oh, isn't that funny?
The last N is for...
CN Star.
No money, yeah.
No money. Work harder is the back of that T-shirt. Oh, so I take it back. I thought he maybe had this big merch thing. He's got one lousy sweatshirt. Casey, you're slacking off. Do you think he makes a lot of money on YouTube?
Yeah.
He probably made enough money with the CNN deal that he doesn't, the money is less of a concern, I would
guess. Who's the great, the therapist who's on it, the woman? She's wonderful.
YouTube therapist?
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, she's spectacular. Every year at my favorite session at VidCon is mental health. And you have YouTubers who've talked about their addiction and their and their depression and their anxiety up there on stage talking about. You have 300 mainly young women in the audience sharing this with them. The empathy is thick. It's phenomenal. But that panel is always moderated by
Katie Morton.
Thank you, Katie Morton. And Katie Morton is just great.
She's a licensed psychotherapist.
Yep. And she has tremendous loyalty. Then there's...
Wait a minute, because she only has 205,000 subscribers. So
you're kidding. Really?
Yeah, so she's now 351, but still not millions. So, and 12,000 views, 20,000 views.
Oh, so, you're right.
This gets into the concept that... subscribers maybe aren't everything. I mean,
well, they are if you're trying to monetize your YouTube.
Well, monetize,
now she has a Patreon.
Yeah,
let's see
YouTube,
how many people on the Patreon
promotes you.
Yeah, let's see on the Patreon.
What about My Drunk Kitchen? What's her name?
My Drunk Kitchen. So she's only got 535 patrons on Patreon. So that's not a big bunch of money. She's working hard, and she probably still has her day job. I hate to say
Hannah Hart. She's a big one, too.
Hannah Hart.
H-A-R-T. My
Drunk Kitchen. Oh, yeah. I think I saw her with I, Justine. Now, she's got 2.5 million subscribers.
Yeah, she's bigger.
Yeah. Does she get drunk and cook?
And she crossed over. She did a show for, like, the Food Network or something.
Yeah. She also has How to Talk to a Friend About Suicide.
Yes.
There's a lot of awareness now about mental health on YouTube. I think that's been something... I think you could say
it's been
clearly
incredibly
helpful. Digital side has pushed that into mainstream.
It really has. And we had many of you remember we had a phenomenal end to the show, I guess 3 weeks ago with Ant and Kevin.
Ant Pruitt and Kevin Toefel, yeah.
Both talking about Ant, his wife's depression. He was very open about it and talking about it, and Kevin about his own. And I had exchanges with one email afterwards. I'm just so grateful for the courage that they showed in doing that, the taking away the stigma. This is a phenomenal medium and opportunity for that, for people to know they're not alone. You know, we've all been crushed by the recent celebrity suicides. So the fact that Hannah Hart will talk about that openly is amazing. I also put on the rundown down at the bottom, Will Wheaton.
Will Wheaton, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Gave a speech and put the text of his speech about his depression and anxiety, which was very touching and brave as well.
Well, what's interesting,
he did it because of Jenny Lawson, who the bloggist, she helped prompt him to start talking more openly about it.
Oh, I love the bloggist.
Yes.
Yeah, she's, and she's clearly got mental health issues. I'm sorry. That's not nice to say, but you could tell when she is funny because she's in pain. Is that reasonable to say that?
Yes, it's a better way to say it than you originally said it.
Yes.
Oh, believe me, I have mental health issues. I have no stigma. Believe me, no stigma at all. In fact, more and more, I think we all do. I really do. But it's great when these people are coming forward.
I don't
forward.
Know her. Ooh.
The blog.
You don't know Jenny Lawson?
Oh,
have you
my
never
God.
Read her books?
I don't.
She's hysterical. Oh, Jeff. But you know what? It's. I guess what I'm saying in justification is, like many comics, a lot of comedy seems to come out of pain, personal pain, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. But it's not just comics. It's everybody.
That's it, right. Is.
Yeah.
So different topic. This is a little bit of kind of breaking. So Facebook promised to label political ads and to reveal who bought them, right? Which everybody said, yay, at last, right?
Yes.
Well, when I was out at F8, I quickly saw they were wrestling then, and they've been wrestling ever since. Uh-oh. So when the New York Times advertises their coverage of a topic, the effort to scale this made Facebook want to say political ad. New York Times has a S-fit over this, and other publishers do too.
Oh.
But Facebook kind of didn't know what to do about this. So they just announced, just as after we started on the air, they changed their policy. So now a couple of things. One, their label is going to be paid for by, which is great, which should be on every ad alive. Every ad everywhere should have who paid for this.
I agree.
And then B, they're going to have to figure out how to segregate political stuff from news. And that's actually harder than it sounds.
Well, wait a minute. Scale. Because the New York Times is not paying for that article on Facebook.
Oh, no. The New York Times does pay for things. That was the point. The New York Times does pay to promote its coverage. Nick Kristof covering
But it's always, hasn't it always said that, paid promotion or something on Facebook?
But now it had to say political ad.
Oh.
And they also required that you had to give your passport to say who it was and prove you were an American citizen buying this ad.
But that's not political ad. That's journalism.
What?
That's the problem.
Therein lied the problem.
But it isn't a political ad. It's journalism.
I know, but it's hard to who's a journalist.
Wait, though, because some of their editorials, I would argue, are political ads almost.
Almost.
I would not call what they're doing. I would not call the editorial pages of newspapers journalism. I think that's actually a really important distinction. Maybe you need multiple distinctions.
Herein lies their headache.
If you're Nick Kristof and you have a opinion piece in the New York Times, and the New York Times promotes it on Facebook, it doesn't need to be billed as a political ad paid for by the New York Times. It doesn't make any sense at all.
All right,
A lot of writing has point of view. That doesn't make it political advertising.
Well, so like when Ajit Pai writes something in the Wall Street Journal, is that political?
No.
Or is that...
Not if the journal publishes it, no. If Ajit Pai writes an article that says you should vote for candidate X, that might be...
But there's more to politics, especially in today's
than voting.
World.
Yeah, than voting. Which is, don't forget what the Russians did. They went after issues like race.
Yeah.
You got to be careful, because if you start billing everything as political advertising, then it means nothing.
I couldn't agree more, and that's what they're facing, and that's what they realized. The world pushed them to a solution. They said, okay, we'll label political ads. Then the way they wanted to do that was to say, if your bought ad is about all these things, that's political. Well, if it's about coverage of that thing, that's one remove, and they didn't know what to do with it, and they went through about 2 months of the publishers just screeching. And I get it. I think publishers are right to screech because this. I agree with you, Leo. This is absurd. But they didn't know how to do it. So this is the world that we're in now. It's just fascinating to see these things that you wouldn't have expected would have caused real headaches. So that change came out just.
We can find a definition of political advertising that does not include op-ed pieces. But
Stacey disagrees with you.
I do. I might write an op-ed about it. do we want to talk about Google? Because I have a question for y'all.
There's a difference between political speech and political ads.
Oh, okay,
one's
yes.
Paid for.
Yeah.
Political speech.
But if you make an advertisement based on political speech.
No, but they're not making – that's New York Times buying promotion for the New York Times. That's indirect by indirection of one. That's not the same thing as a paid political ad. I think that's...
I agree, but that wasn't easy to do.
Well, I just did it.
you have to have a list. The problem is this. You have to have a list of who is a legitimate news organization. Now, I'm actually working on a project.
I guess you're right. Breitbart bought... promotion for a Breitbart editorial supporting... anybody but Mark Sanford,
Right.
That would kind of count like a political ad. All right.
Even though they call themselves a publisher or a news publisher. Yeah. No, their agenda is clear. Their agenda is propaganda.
I feel like there's political speech, there's advertising, there's promotional advertising for content. That should not be political. That should not. I think it's worth maybe there's some gray areas getting through to being very clear that this was an ad purchased by organization X to promote candidate Y. That should be billed.
What about purchased by Planned Parenthood?
And the
ad pushes the agenda of
because Planned Parenthood's not a journalistic entity.
No, but is that a political ad?
Yeah.
Okay.
What if Ann Richards writes a? Okay, she's dead. Cecile Richards writes a.
It's a miracle.
Op-eds
never a political ad. That's just a political speech.
Okay.
Political speech is protected. That's the other thing. You're going to have a very hard time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, they're not saying that it's not. I mean, they're not saying they're not going to run it. They're just saying they want to label it.
Right.
Label it. That's right.
I mean.
Okay.
That's like those people who argue that their free speech is being violated when they get fired for being a jerk on the job.
Does it dilute the value of those labels if you put it on too many things? Maybe not.
That's part of the question too. Yeah. I mean, so at the root of this, I'm about to start working on a project. I won't talk about it now because it'll go on forever. But another week, I'm happy to, that looks at what is quality news. You have to start with what's news. You have to look at the signals of quality. And I'm not saying there's one size fits all at all, but those are discrete issues.
Coming up, we're going to talk about Google. Stacey promises.
Do we have to, Stacey? Do we have to?
I just have one question. It's a burning question.
Hold on.
So.
But
Let it burn a little longer.
Because the tease is going to burn.
I
got to
do an
you.
Advertisement. So hold that burning thought while we talk a little bit about a publishing platform, a place for you to make your space on the web, a way for businesses to reach customers, a way for businesses to sell to customers. Yes, all that in one fabulous bundle. I'm talking about WordPress.com. It's where my website lives, leolaporte.com. Pretty much everybody I know has a WordPress site. Actually, 30% of the entire World Wide Web is on WordPress. That's kind of a stunning statistic. It's because it's so good. If you visited my site, you know that this is the most, it's the center of me online, right? And everybody ought to have this. If you've got a high schooler, first thing to do, set them up with a website, get their domain name, get them online so that they control their reputation online because they have this website. My daughter's doing this. She's putting her best stuff up there, her portfolio, her resume, her poetry, her art, because she wants to have a presence online. Your Facebook page is not it. You don't own that. Your Twitter feed, that's not it either. You don't own that. You own your website at WordPress.com. And WordPress makes it easy. I mean, you're not there. Some people are there maybe to learn web technologies. And certainly if you're into HTML and JavaScript and CSS, you could do all of that. But you don't need to. You don't need to do the coding. You don't need to do the design. WordPress has great templates, great designs, really state-of-the-art stuff. So you can get your site up and running like that. You focus on the content. They'll handle all the rest of it. And if you ever have a question, I was looking for a template that did certain things. Customer support teams, they're all day and all night on Monday through Friday. They're even there on weekends. I asked them a question. They suggested a template. And I was very gratified because Abby chose completely independently exactly the same template for her website 2017. I thought, great minds. WordPress also offers powerful e-commerce options. My son asked, well, I don't want to put my pictures. He's an avid amateur photographer. I don't want to put them on Facebook. They get squeezed too much. The quality's too low. I said, Facebook's terrible. You got to go to WordPress.com. And so he's going to set up his site on WordPress.com. And their e-commerce options are perfect. You have a simple and effective buy button on the photo, or you can have a complete online store. Casey Neistat, pay attention. Plans start at just $4 a month. And if you want to expand your business's online reach, I have the business plan. That's really great. You get built-in SEO, social sharing, specialized plugins. I use the Google AMP plugin, automatic. Every site's HTTPS. I mean, I can go on and on. It's really great. Get started today with 15% off any new plan purchase at wordpress.com/twig. Create your website for your personal presence on the net, your business. In fact, if you're a business, you got to have a website. wordpress.com/twig. 15% off that brand new site right now. Get on in there. wordpress.com/twig. All right, Stacy. You wanted to talk about Google. Here's your chance.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
I wanted to ask, because I've seen a lot of news coverage here about Google giving people three things they can say on the Google Home. Kevin and I both tried it this morning, and then Google pulled that tweet. We tried it this morning, and it wasn't working for us. So I was curious if it's working for anyone else.
I don't even understand what it is.
So basically, you can give Google three consecutive commands. Oh. So tell me the weather in London, Houston, and Austin. Ooh. And it's supposed to work. But it has so far not worked for me. I tried it with weather. I tried it with lights. I tried it with some other stuff and nothing. So I can do two, which was the old default. So if anyone else
tell
can
me
do
what
it,
temperature it is in Austin, LeBron James height, and the length of the London Bridge. Nope.
Okay, yeah, because everyone's like
50 places in Rome, Florence, and Venice. I got completely garbage results on that one. Holy cow. So is it easier if I say them related? What is the temperature in Austin, Houston, and Dallas? It gave me search results. But the result I got was, is Dallas normally hotter than Austin or San Antonio? I mean,
I don't know. Is it?
Austin had the highest number of days when the temperature exceeded the highs. So Austin is, you live in the hottest spot. Number 16th in the U.S. for hottest summertime weather.
Yay. Yeah, so they pulled that tweet. So I guess not yet. I was just wondering, because some people were like, I can do it. And I'm like, really? But okay. That's it. That was my only Google-related thing that I was like just really curious about.
Oh, we got tons of Google stuff.
I was going to start with that.
I hadn't heard about that. As of this writing, Google seems to have deleted the original tweet. So, apparently it only works in France.
What? No.
I don't know.
Was that the Amazon Echo? Wired actually did a good story on inside Amazon's painstaking pursuit to teach Alexa French. And it was actually a pretty good story.
That's got
to
be hard.
Yeah,
because they don't say half the letters.
The too long didn't read version is, it's hard.
It's hard.
But yes.
You'll love this one, Jeff. Murdoch-based backed tech startup sinks into bankruptcy, saying it had been crushed by Google. Unlocked, an Australian advertising startup.
Lachlan. Murdoch, an advertising startup, and Google wouldn't put it in the Play Store, saying that it violated the rules.
So there you go. I don't think it takes Google to kill a startup. They're pretty weak. They're weaklings. No. Facebook bug sets 14 million users sharing settings to public. They fixed it.
What about the Pixel 3 leaks? Should I trust those?
I guess. What would you do? What would you do with that information if it were real?
Literally nothing.
So
I have
trust
two
them then.
Phones. One my U.S., one my international. I left the international on the plane.
Oh, Jeff.
So which plane? Which airline?
United. So I went down. I discovered a week later. I thought it was my briefcase. Oops, it's not there. So it was, God knows where it's gone around the world or wherever, it's someplace else. So I go in. I drive into work. I go by Newark Airport. I go into Lost and Found. A woman comes out. Very nice woman. She says, "I got a lot of these Samsonite phones, but I can't find one. No Google ones." She thought they were all Samsonite.
Samsonite?
I wouldn't trust that. Are you running like Tile or something on it?
No, I run, you can do the Android thing, but it's only if it's on, will it tell you where it is.
Yeah.
I used that the other day because I couldn't find my Pixel 2. And I looked for 2 days and it had fallen down a crack in the bed, and I found it with the Find My phone, which was great. And it had still 28%, but you're right. As soon as the battery's dead, you're out of luck. So you got to
it's gone. So
look
so
within a couple of days.
Jake had one of my old phones. So I got to go to Tel Aviv on Friday. So I'm having to FedEx it to me. I just got a new Fi chip.
Well, the good news is Fi has expanded
more phones.
To other phones. You can actually get some fairly inexpensive.
Yeah, one of them was $199. So this is a new gambit. So I just looked that up. The Moto G6 is $199.
Yeah.
On Best Buy. $199 if you activate. It's unlocked. $199 if you activate today. $249 if you don't. So it's really unlocked at $249.
And yeah. That's rude. So what is Google?
That's rude.
That's rude. How rude. How rude. So what is Google selling? They're selling...
Pixels, Moto G6, Android One, Moto X4, LG G7.
Not anymore.
What do you mean?
They must have sold out. I'm looking at the Google store. There's just Pixels now.
Oh, no, but if you go Google Fi.
Oh, you have to do it through Fi.
If you go to Fi, and then let me try to see if I can buy the Moto G6.
The G6 is a great phone. I mean, it's cheap, but it's certainly good enough for your...
So you can buy the Moto G6 $199
for 24 months. Oh no, $199
or $829 a month for 24 months. Yeah. With Fi.
Well, that's what you want, Fi, right?
Yeah, I'm just gonna get my old phone comes back from Jake, then I'll use that. Or I say I'm going to Best Buy and buy the Moto G7
is very nice. I wouldn't get the V35. It's kind of kind of big and clunky.
But the G7 is really expensive. Coming soon, the two LGs.
Yeah.
The Moto X4 is
not bad. Yeah, it's got better battery life.
That's an Android One phone.
It is? Really?
Yeah, that's what they said.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's interesting. Huh.
It is.
But you use it mostly as a phone, right?
Well, internationally, I use it for all my data, mapping and all that stuff so I don't get ripped off. For tethering.
Now is probably a good time to get a Pixel 2 XL. They're taking $150 off, so it's $700.
But this is back to Stacey's point, finally. So what do I do with this information about the Pixel 3? Is I anticipate getting the Pixel 3. So I'm not going to spend too much money now on anything.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that will be probably
that way,
October,
this phone
though.
Become my backup international phone.
Right.
So when do you think? October?
Yeah.
October. That's when they usually come out.
After Apple's announcement.
Oh, did you see the Google Translate things you can download? That's pretty cool. So
no.
Offline Google Translate.
Oh, tell me about that.
Yeah. Google this sucker. I think it's like 59 languages you can download to your device, so you can just do translate even when you don't have a cloud connection.
That is great.
Wow.
Awesome. Sauce.
I have to say, having used both Google Translate and Microsoft's Bing Translate, I like the Bing Translator a little bit better.
They have that instantaneously too, don't they?
Yeah, it's offline as well.
The Bing doesn't work as well. Bing is what Twitter uses. It's not as good, to my mind.
Well, that's not the speech translation, though. I don't know.
Oh, I see.
This is nice. So offline neural machine translations for 59 languages.
Yeah, they just say neural.
When I worked at the San Francisco Examiner, we used a CMS called SII, Systems Integrators, and they had a standalone terminal. I'm going to get to a point, believe it or not, where it was just considered the most rock star, amazing coding that somebody managed to get hyphenation and justification onto the terminal locally. This was just phenomenal.
Oh, it doesn't
that you could do that, right? And now you can store 59 languages and translation and all this crap on your phone.
In your pocket. Come a long way, baby.
Yeah.
Yep. And by the way, you still can't do hyphenization on an Android
that's
device.
True.
So maybe that was just a hard. So Facebook's
hyphens, they're hard.
Hyphens are hard. Hyphens are very hard. Facebook memories, yeah. Fire TV Cube. I did order one of these. This is going to be interesting. Amazon has announced this thing with infrared coming out of all the sides. So you put this in your cabinet with all your other gear for your TV, and it can control them. With the voice, with the Echo. So
now, does this control things like your what's the word that I'm looking for?
Your TiVo,
cable box,
your cable box,
your
TV, your
Roku, your cable box,
everything. So the idea is it's kind of like what Logitech
receiver.
Does. Receiver,
that's
yes. Anything, anything you can turn on off or on with your infrared remote. And now I'm going to get one because I have a lot of experience with Logitech's universal remotes. And one of the things Logitech has going for it is they have an online site where you that knows about every kind of brand of receiver and everything.
So this is going to compete heavily then with the Logitech Harmony Hub.
Yes.
If it's good.
It's as easy to configure. And that's going to be the real test. Harmony's been around for years. So Logitech
and it's easy to configure.
Yeah. It's a massive database. And you just go online and you say, if you want to watch... You know, World Cup soccer, you have to turn on the satellite dish, you have to turn on the receiver, you have to go to HDMI 1, you turn on the TV, go to set the cable box to, I mean, you have to do all of that stuff, and then it will show up. If it can do that, man, that's going to be, anyway, I have one on order. It should be,
it's $100.
Say again?
How much is it?
Well, right now it's $120. If you'd ordered it right away, $90 for Prime members, but just in the first 2 days. So that's why I ordered it immediately.
Okay. Well, let me know. Cause
I will let you know.
Although Harmony's $100 and it
Hub
also works
great.
With Google.
Yeah. And it's great.
So
I don't know. How good is the Google integration for you?
The Google Harmony integration is terrible. I had to create my own routine.
That's right.
Because it's where you're like, Google, ask Harmony to do something. And then a separate voice is like, hello, I'm Harmony. How can I help you? Well, and you're like, shut up. Turn on my television.
Considering this comes from Amazon, I'm hoping that that will be a little bit better, a little tighter integration.
Do you have your Fire TV? Do you have a Fire TV? I'd be curious how it compares to a Fire TV.
It is a Fire TV.
Okay. Then the same experience.
It
okay.
Be yeah. It is basically a Fire TV with this additional remote stuff.
Got it.
Oh, this is great. We're just whipping through this stuff.
Content.
Oh.
Content.
Aren't you glad you don't live in Tanzania?
Yeah.
We have a story about Tanzania? Hold on.
We do.
Where is the Tanzania story?
An irritating angry.
I will tell you everything you need to know right now, Stacey Higginbotham.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see it.
Dar es Salaam. I've always wanted to say that. Tanzania...
Dateline, Dar es Salaam.
Tanzania has ordered all unregistered bloggers and online forums to suspend immediately or face criminal prosecution. And the cost of registering your blog? $900 for a license, which is an interesting number since that's also the number of per capita annual income in Tanzania. So a year's salary to run a blog. Otherwise, they're coming for you. Digital activists say the law is part of a crackdown on dissent and free speech by the President John Magufuli, who was elected in 2015. Government officials, and this should be, pay attention. The justification the government gives is, no, we're tackling hate speech, cyberbullying, and pornography.
This is going to be used as an excuse for everything. Same thing as going after a sex trade left us. Yep. Without a Section 230.
Exactly. June 15th, starting from June 11th, prohibited from posting any new content, and you must be licensed by June 15th or they're coming for you. This is how they do it, folks, just so you know. It's a good, you know, good thing to be aware of. The fine, minimum of $2,200. Imprisonment for a minimum of 12 months or both.
Jesus.
Immediately, of course, some forums have shut down. I didn't know there was a group called Reporters Without Borders.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And they said
they're very good.
Kill off the blogosphere in Tanzania. Yep. And I think a lot of people say, well, big deal. What do we need blogs for?
Free speech places where the government controls the news organizations.
Right. And here's some good news. Podcast ad revenues hit $314 million in 2017.
So who got the other $14 million, Leo?
Well,
it wasn't me.
That's up, by the way, 86% from 2016.
Jeez.
But I got to tell you, this the number last year was wrong. I don't know how close this is to accurate. This is done by the IAB.
You actually have a impressive percentage of that, really.
Well, last year when they said it was 169 million, we had 10 million of that. And I thought, well, there's got to be more than 16 of us.
Yeah.
But, anyway, I think that that number is tough because podcasters don't all belong to the IAB. It's very expensive.
No.
Oh, I don't belong to the IAB.
Right. I don't belong to the IAB.
Why would you?
Because I'll tell you why we've looked at it, but it is really expensive. I can't remember what it's going to cost, but we're going to do it because we want representation. Because the IAB, unfortunately, it's the Interactive Advertising Bureau. It's the equivalent of the RAB for radio. And what is the magazine version of this?
I forget, similar,
but the idea, it's the CAB, I think. But it's the same idea, which is Circulation Ad Bureau or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
The idea is really advertisers that put this together. And so a lot of advertising agencies use IAB boilerplate contracts and standards. And many of the terms in the IAB contracts are death to podcasters. We don't accept IAB contracts. We amend them. So we want.
So I don't understand why you would join.
So that you can,
you can argue,
so you can
and
weigh
change
in and say, look, this is, you got to understand, this is not acceptable. Like, we can't do this. And then also so that these numbers become a little bit more accurate. Host read ads were the most heavily used ad type. 2/3 of all ads in 2017. I'm going to take credit for actually bringing that to podcasting.
You bloody well should, yes.
Direct response ads.
You know, Leo, this is like a Howard Stern rant now. He has a fit about the Broadcasting Hall of Fame. There should be a Podcast Hall of Fame, and you should be
the
first person.
And I was.
Oh, there is?
Yeah.
Oh, well, then good. There's justice.
I got a trophy in the other room.
There's a shack somewhere in Des Moines.
There is. The folks at Podcast Pickle put it together.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you're in the podcast.
I was in the inaugural year.
Yay. Well, that's justice. That should
along
be,
with, it? Appropriately, Adam Curry.
Right.
And I don't remember who else. Maybe, I don't know. I think Mark Maron is in there. Adam Carolla. Dave Weiner should be. He really created the code that made it possible. Host read ads, direct response ads. We were just talking about this. Transacted on a cost per thousand basis, majority of campaigns. Brand awareness ads, 29%. That's actually, that's very good.
Oh, Lord, I don't know any of the current inductees.
Into the Podcast Hall of Fame?
Yes, if you look up Academy of Podcasts. So
it happens.
Kemda, Keith and the Girl.
Yeah, Keith and the Girl have been doing this forever.
Dave Jackson, School of Podcasting.
So really what happens after year five
never mind.
Is you got to run. It's not like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame where you've got a deep list of people or the Baseball Hall of Fame, a deep list of people ready and willing to assume the role. But Keith and the Girl have been doing it. They deserve it. They long time. I don't know Dave. He's an award-winning podcaster. Oh, Father Roderick, of course. He's been doing it as long as I have. He's been around a long time. The Radio Adventures of Dr. Floyd. He's been doing it in the same. These are all early people. Pamela Gay, great. Yeah, these are all good. These are all good winners.
Okay,
Scott Johnson, Frog Pants. Past inductees. Luria Petrucci.
There you are, Leo.
Callie Lewis, Dan Klass, Brian Ibbett, Rob Greenlee, Rob Walsh.
Oh, you didn't go to the ceremony.
No, I had to record. Because it was in Fort Worth. It was somewhere I couldn't get to. It was in Texas. along with Muriel Lafferty of Geek Fu Action Grip, Scott Sigler, Todd Cochran, Danny Pena, and Adam Curry. So I guess Dave Weiner has not won yet, so I'll have to nominate him.
Because Dave did podcast, but he was never kind of a regular podcaster.
Well, no, and so he's in the Hall of Fame because he created podcasting.
Well, exactly. He should be one of those lifetime achievement awards.
Yeah. Yeah,
right. Because doesn't matter the year. It doesn't matter the podcast. Dave Weiner should be a Lifetime Achievement Award.
The new inductees will be added to the Hall of Fame in Philadelphia, and I think it's in August.
So you win second prize. You're in Philadelphia. Yeah.
No, it's true. It's in Philadelphia this year. Let's see. What else can we talk about?
Oh, there was some other stuff.
Oh, yeah. Here's a good one. Plume, which I use.
This is the one I want Stacey to talk about.
I like Plume.
And still like them
now.
That's the story I wrote 2 years ago. So you actually need the Verge story, which is below it, talking about the $60 fee.
Yeah. So, I use Plume, along with Eero in my house. I've spent a lot of money. I have 12 Plume units.
Dear God.
Well, you're supposed to put one in every room. I mean, it really
is. They a sponsor or was
they are not. Eero is a sponsor. Now, remember, Plume took a big investment from our favorite company, Comcast. And when you get Xfinity's Wi-Fi solution, you get Plume Pods to extend it.
Only if you need to extend it, yes. Yeah, and you actually X-Fi. Have to purchase them.
Oh, you don't get them. You buy them.
Yes. So if you have crappy Wi-Fi, you call them up, you complain, and they're like, I can offer you this for, I don't know how much it is, $39, I think.
Plume has added a new router, a tri-band, a bigger router than the little ones. I'll probably buy that. But you have to pay $60 a year to keep it active. And this is the thing that's most offensive. If you don't pay the subscription, it stops working.
Well, so if you pay the subscription, you buy the three-pack for $40.
You get a deal.
Right. So basically, so the original is $180. So 40 plus 120 gets you two years.
Two free years. But on year three, if you don't pay, they brick that hardware, which I think they should not do. I do think that they're justified in charging. Eero has a optional subscription service for additional features.
Well, I don't understand why this is, it's not hardware like, you put your
it's
home.
It's not like your old-fashioned router where you buy it, you plug it in, and you're done. But all of these new mesh services are constantly updating with firmware, and they claim constantly modifying their behavior to adjust to your network. And
so does my Chromebook.
Okay. Hold on, you guys. Let's talk about this for a little bit. So what Plume offers is slightly different than what Eero and some other guys offer. All of their intelligence and all of their routing happens in the cloud. So they are actually constantly pulling data from these things about the devices trying to connect and the state of your network, and they're optimizing that literally on the fly. So think about that. So they're also
so even my Microsoft laptop had new printer drivers.
Well, you also get parental controls, you get additional security features. There's stuff you're getting that you could conceivably subscribe to from
keep
other
going,
people.
Stacey. Keep going.
And you could still get that from, you know, Eero offers a subscription. The challenge for a company like Plume is they're actually making a very different case. They're trying to take Wi-Fi and turn it into more of a service. And this has always been their case, which is why 2 years ago I was like, oh, hey, they're going to charge people for this because I knew that was where they wanted to go. They're actually licensing their stuff to ISPs like Comcast. So their software that runs in the cloud and on these edge devices, that's a continually running and updated service. It's not like I'm pushing out an update. The service is delivered via the cloud constantly. So that's one. So your network changes like moment by moment. Two, their big market isn't end consumers. Their big market is selling to ISPs and to selling to having other companies that make Wi-Fi hub type devices put their software inside their devices. So they have a deal with Samsung. And the theory is eventually Samsung is going to put this software into anything that has, not anything, but anything that has enough processing power and Wi-Fi and help create these like mesh networks around your home using existing smart home stuff.
Routers. That's interesting.
Yes. Yeah. So that's the goal. And I would also say this gives you, and I'm not against this because I think it gives you more certainty that you're going to need in today's era of lots of devices running in your home. It gives you a lot more security because you can, if I'm paying $60, they darn well better give me a security update on every vulnerability ASAP. I think for most of your audience, Leo, they're going to hate this because they're smart enough and they deal with their own stuff. But like a common normal person paying $60 a month to have guaranteed awesome Wi-Fi. $5 a month. $6 a month?
Well, what's interesting is the website has kind of changed the language. It now says not buy Plume, but join Plume. Yeah, they're so, really acting like you're really subscribing to a service that happens to have some associated hardware. Now, as an existing Plume guy, I don't think I have to worry about this, right? I'm grandfathered.
No, somebody said, oh, really? Yeah. I thought one of the stories said you're...
They changed it. They got cleared. The Verge originally reported that in there. They came back with clarification. The Verge was like, oh, yeah. Okay. So the Verge...
One of the many things I hated my cable company for before I got Verizon was that they rented me the damn router.
Yeah.
Right. And forever. And long after I paid him off for it. Right. So we finally got freed from that. Just like the old telephone, we had to rent our telephones. This is something consumers have had to do, but they hate.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of
Comcast modem fees are $11 a month.
Right.
But you know what? People paid for it. People continually pay for it. A lot of people
same
do not go out
AOL.
And buy their. No, and it's not the AOL people. It's normal people who just are like, screw it. It's all part of that. I mean, I know we in the tech press get so aggravated by it, but, you know, most people don't think about it. So
I pay for the
Euros. That's a kind of awful business model, isn't it?
No, I don't think so. I think it's just because your expectations are conditioned by what a router used to be. This is a different thing now.
Think about your Linksys or TP-Link router. Somebody in the chat room was like saying, isn't this like it's a half-baked product? And I say no, because they're continually, like, routers are continually being targeted now as great devices to hack. And they're
Look at VPN being, filter.
The vulnerabilities are, like, everywhere. Yeah. So having somebody who's willing to upgrade that and do it very proactively, I think, is a really important thing that...
I probably won't pay for... Plume service, because that's my IoT network. It's a separate network from the Eero, but I do pay for Eero Plus, which is a similarly priced product that gives you all sorts of additional security services. It's kind of like OpenDNS and services like that. So
I think Eero Plus is $10 a month.
Is it?
Yeah, so it's actually twice that. Let me make sure before I say that. Because I looked at buying it, and I was going to buy it, and they have 1Password and VPN services as part of it.
So it has EncryptMe, 1Password, Malwarebytes. You get advanced security, prevent access to sites that host malicious content or viruses. You get ad blocking. So that's network-wide ad blocking. You have family filtering, which means I can have filters for my kid that are more aggressive.
Wait a second. It blocks ads coming through the router to the web.
Prevent most ads from appearing on your mobile phone, desktop, and other connected services.
That sounds as a publisher, of course, I hate that. It's a copyright violation. It's awful.
I turned it on.
It ain't net neutrality. That's for damn sure.
No.
Leo, I'm paying you're for starving journalist, Leo.
They basically get a VPN service. So I think for what you get, that's not an unreasonable amount of money. But, and I think, again, it's going to really come down to what do you get with Plume? And are you getting what you're paying for? Is it something worthwhile?
Yeah, I mean,
the problem is you have to buy all this before you find, you know, there's no way to, you have to kind of buy into it. I don't know what I'm going to do because I'd like to get one of the new routers. It looks like the only way to get a super pod is to buy a lifetime membership. And two more pods. And like I said, I have 12 of these guys. I got Eero's Plumes everywhere because it's my. I have them in my garage and stuff because it reaches out to all my. You know, it's my IoT network.
Well, so $200.
That's a lifetime membership, by the way, which I think
that's a lifetime membership, and that's my for TiVo 5 years.
My TiVo. Oh, lifetime is 5 years.
Yes, and I think it's you may hate that, but I'm going to tell you that's a good thing that they're putting a limit on it as opposed to just being like, it's lifetime, and then 5 years from now being like...
You want new routers anyway by then.
Yeah, I would say.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the good news is there's choices.
I wanted you to explain it to me. I still don't like it, but I got it.
But you have a choice.
Yeah, and you do. You can buy other... There are plenty of other routers out there, so I just... Yeah. I think it'll be really interesting to watch. It's a good indicator as more and more connected devices try to be focused more on the service than the hardware. Are we really ready for that?
And there really are a lot of things a router can do better than the current crop of routers. There's a lot of ways it could be better if it's an ongoing service, I think.
So, we shall see. Is it time for our things?
It's time for...
I want to do one thing first.
Oh, just kidding. Sorry.
amuses me. What's his name? Where'd it go? Former Facebook Palmer Luckey.
Oh my God, this guy's insane.
He is. You know, he discovers corporate politics. Gee, some people don't like. Geez, we don't like. you know, just because the guy was what, 3 years old when he sold the company and became a billionaire. You know, what's going to do to his head? So he's all concerned about Facebook, and he spent 3 years there, and some people just don't like me, and they don't nice me. But here's the point of why I wanted this. You know what he's doing now? He's killed me.
Yes.
virtual reality border protection.
Jeez.
Palmer Luckey was the founder, we should mention, of Oculus. Made a lot of money selling it to Facebook. He actually first made a lot of money off of me and others like me who gave him money in a Kickstarter campaign.
Shucks.
And then turned around a couple of years later and made a lot more money selling it off to Facebook. He made it good because he gave us the new Oculus Rift for free. So that was okay. I got two Oculus Rifts out of it. He kind of got let go at Facebook after it turned out he had created a kind of meme troll agency on Reddit, pro-Trump kind of meme system that was bizarre. And they didn't like that. So he went off and did this new thing. And he's been, you know, he has a close relationship with Trump. He's been trying to sell this to Trump, and apparently it's being used. And apparently successfully, according to this article.
With
is
Peter
this the Wired
Thiel,
article?
A virtual border wall.
The Verge.
Oh.
The Verge. He has successes. He's got success stories.
So instead of a physical wall, his idea is you will build a virtual one built of cameras with machine learning to identify people and that sort of thing.
The Verge says they've already caught dozens of people.
Yes, it's barely a year old. They've installed three 32-foot towers packed with radar, communications gear, and a laser-enhanced camera. It's called Lattice.
And soon lasers to shoot you down, probably.
Well, so that's the question.
And separate you from your baby.
So it's being tested on private property right now.
Right.
So, but there's a lot of interest. Over a 10-week span, Anduril, that's the name of its security towers, probably something out of Middle Earth, right? Apparently helped border agents catch 55 people, seize 982 pounds of marijuana. 39 of the arrests were not connected to drugs.
Anduril is the company. Lattice is the technology. The right. Lattice is the communication gear.
Yeah. Hey, it's better than a wall.
It is. I mean, and they're...
You can't deny we have the right to protect the border.
I would have a hard time with this knowing what happens to the people afterwards.
Well, but that you should fix that separately, I think.
Yes, I'm not, but I would definitely have a hard time as a founder building something that then is used. And the other thing is, once you have this there, why not put it everywhere?
There's another issue.
Casey Hunt at NBC just tweeted. Infant ripped from mother's arms while she was breastfeeding the baby at border detention center. Christ. Mother handcuffed for resisting.
Horrible.
Right. That's the problem.
However, that's unrelated. But there is a little bit of concern because Palantir, a name that should send chills down your spine, is also involved.
Peter Thiel in being involved sent enough chills down. I'm like, you know.
By the way, both Palantir and Anduril are Tolkien references. They are from Middle Earth.
Ah.
I bet you J.R.R. Tolkien is spinning in his grave. This is a lot more like Sauron than it is like a Hobbit. Interesting. So Palantir has been known for doing all sorts of kind of creepy surveillance stuff. Very secretive company. And
it's an enchanted blade from the Lord of the Rings.
Anduril is. Yeah, Anduril is Aragorn's blade. Palantir.
Dude, I read that like when I was 12.
Palantir is one of those globes, right? One of those like crystal balls. That Sauron has. Like the Saudis have, like Trump was holding. And they look into them and they can see stuff. Palantirs, they can see what's going on in the other Palantir. So even the name tells you a little bit about what Palantir is all about.
Okay. Yeah. And their pitch deck offered autonomous long-range bombers, attack drone swarms, and something they called perimeter security on a pole.
Is that a Polish person?
No, building a surveillance tower using off-the-shelf sensors and cameras, connect them to the network, and make it something in the spirit of Google Maps and Pokemon Go. And that's actually what they built.
So we talk a lot about how, we've been talking a lot about how technologists should have ethical bases on the things they develop and really think about the consequences. But this is the problem, is there are plenty of technologists out there who do, and their decision is, yeah, let's go for it. this is exactly the consequence we want.
I mean, there are challenges. I mean, like here in Texas, building the wall is a big issue because there are places that run through private property, run through like wildlife and bird reserves. So something like this is a lot, you know, it doesn't hinder migration patterns of animals, for example.
Well, and it probably costs less than $18 billion, which is the...
I think they had 7.6. Was that the number of the story? Hold on.
And it sounds like it actually might be more effective than a wall. The problem with walls is people can tunnel right under them. I guess if you wouldn't
be
visible.
You could tunnel under this.
You could tunnel under this too, yeah.
You have a long tunnel.
Well, same thing.
Now, what would be interesting is because you can fool AI cameras by wearing weird makeup or doing so. If you change your physical profile, it would be interesting.
All the new immigrants will be wearing
just robot masks.
Or no, I'll tell them right now what you should do. You can make a LED collar that emits light that blinds the camera. You look.
Oh, that's true. IR collars. Yeah.
Everything looks normal to you. Everything's going fine. You're wearing a strange necklace, but other than that, and you're completely invisible to the camera. And some, you know what, Jeff? Let's start a business making those.
Yeah.
That's going to be
huge.
New
Mexico.
Not just everybody will want to wear one of these so that the face recognition stuff doesn't work.
Okay, this is your first affiliate commerce deal.
This is brilliant. but then you have to walk funny because there's also gait analysis. So every morning you have to have a new walk.
Well, there's the funny, hence we play the video of the funny walk association.
Yes.
Come on, Carson, you can find that.
Andy in Germany
Ministry
says,
of Silly Walks.
Yeah, it's the Monty Python bit. Andy in Germany says the LEDs do not work.
Yeah, I think it's IR, isn't it?
Yeah, it's infrared. Colleen, our old chief engineer, was going to make one of these for me. She's now working at Facebook. Yes, there's a silly walk. So you do that, so the gait analysis won't work. You wear one of these infrared beaming necklaces, and you just look like a strange, silly, glowing ball. And what are they going to do? Shoot you? Probably.
Yeah, probably.
They'll just send people.
Just send people. Soon they'll make those collars illegal is what they'll do. Stacey Higginbotham, do you have a pick this week?
I do. I just did a review of the camera that we have talked so much about. It's moving.
Oh, mine's on order. Oh,
I have three, and I love it.
So on the website, I show videos of it doing things. It's hard to do without a stable base for it to sit on.
I can fire it up here. On my phone.
Here we go. Hold on. All right. Well, I just want to show you it moving around.
Yeah, put your microphone next to it, too, because there is a little bit of mechanical noise.
Wait, but you don't see it, do you? Oh, this is the wrong camera. I'm an idiot. Okay. Da-da-da. Okay, microphone.
I would never say that because you'd punch me. I'll show you if, while she's setting that up here. This is the view. I can double tap it to go full screen of my office just in the other room. And what's cool about this is you can zoom in, you can pan, tilt, and zoom just with your finger, which is really cool. Or you can use the controller. It does a patrol. It's $30. This thing is amazing.
And it stores like 2 weeks on the cloud?
Yeah.
2 weeks for free in the cloud.
For free. You can have a pan scan, which I turn that on and it'll automatically patrol. It also tags with motion. And by the way, it doesn't store anything. There's no motion. There's no video. But you can turn it on and go live anytime. And what's really interesting about it is there's no website. It's all on the device, on your phone. So it feels a little more secure for that reason to me. Maybe not. What do you think?
It does use AES 128 encryption.
Yep.
So it's not quite bank grade, but it's good. And yeah, I love it. I think it's
for $30.
Yeah, I wouldn't use it like all internet connected cameras. When I talked about it, I was like, I have two places where I could see this being useful. One is in my garage, because when my garage door is like, help, I've been open too long. I want to be able to see what's happening before I close it, because I keep closing it on my husband. And then
this is very thoughtful of you.
Isn't it? And yeah. $30, that feels reasonable. Although I don't need this one. I could use a $20 one for that. And then the other use case is when we're out on vacation, just sticking it in my house. The thing I don't like about it is there is no privacy. You can't actually turn it off.
Yeah. The light. So that's what I like about the lighthouse. When either Lisa or I are home, there's no camera. Otherwise, she does not like the idea of having a camera in the house. She won't accept it. So I can't put this in the house, for instance.
And that's it panning all around. And I was just showing how it's 15 frames per second in the day and 10 at night. So it's not like, woo, but it's good enough for $30.
I'll show you.
I got it for the cat problem I discussed last week.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
See what your cat's doing.
And people were very nice on Twitter. No, she doesn't have an infection. She probably has a balance problem and gets confused in the box.
Let me show you one of the things. So this is a view of my office from a distance. We're going to zoom in a little bit, which will degrade the picture. It's actually a better quality than that. But you mentioned, Stacey, the 15 frames. I don't think the motion is a big issue. And I can zoom in. There's a license plate. Watch this. Oops, I got to take. Come here, camera. You're going the wrong way. Go the other way. I'm trying to control it with my finger. Come on, camera. Come on. Stop it. There you go. I can zoom in. There's a license plate. Whoop. I got to turn off the pan and scan and zoom out again so I can find it. But there's a license plate that's at the end of the range I can read. So let me show you. I mean, it's way, way far away, but this is enough resolution that if I zoom in, oh, God damn it.
Yeah. Flip your phone to the side. We can then see the whole image.
Oh yeah. You're right. Of course. What am I thinking? Come on, go full screen. Huh?
Do you have it in portrait mode?
I probably have it turned off that I can do that. Hold on. Go back.
Somebody brought this up in the chat room. I don't know if this is true, but I have no reason to doubt them. They say that the Wyze Cam 2.0 has a 40 character limit on your password, which mine is sub 40 characters, but I would not buy this and have to change all of my device passwords.
Fine.
So I'm really sorry about that.
There
you did it.
A license plate. Pretty far. It zooms away. Pretty far away. I have to say, it's got time, date, standby. I think it's...
Look, you can turn off all that automatic stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can turn off the automatic panning and all that stuff.
I like that. But yeah, for your cat, you don't want to do that. You want to keep it pointing where it's pointing.
Yeah, no, you just would set on motion alerts, I assume, for you. Right. And if you pop an SD card in there, it'll just...
It also, somebody on Reddit was complaining, hey, I see it pinging China. And what I like is the developers were very responsive. They get right on and they said, yeah, on an Android phone, because there's no notification system. We on the Apple phone, we use Apple's notification system. On the Android phone, we have a paid service that happens to be out of China that does those notifications for you. So that's why. But the video is not sent to China.
Right. Leo, does it have multiple camera views on the app? I only have one camera because I gave my other camera away. So,
I haven't set up the other ones. I would assume so, but I don't know. That's a good question. Why wouldn't it?
I never assume anything.
Yes, it does. And I'll tell you why. It does because, so I'll show you, there's a devices page. Right now, I only have one thing in it, which is a named camera.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
but I can have more cameras there. Yeah. So it's in the devices page. You can choose. And I don't know what the limit is, but I'm sure it's a few. You can see history of notifications. The main thing is the price. I mean, there are probably, this is probably the Lighthouse is probably a better deal. Not a better deal, a more powerful device, but it's a lot more expensive and you have to pay a monthly fee for subscription. There's no monthly fee for this, which is amazing to me.
Stacey, on yours, I didn't see the wire going to the electric plug.
Yeah, there is.
There is. It's because it's on a white countertop.
Oh, I see. Okay.
It's got a little micro USB port and plugs into the wall. for $30. Somebody said, HiWeb saying he has four cameras on one app. So, yes.
Well, someone's saying that these should not be considered for security because of their 5-minute cooldown. I don't know.
I don't know what Missing's talking about.
What that means. 5-minute cooldown. No Missing, idea. You'll have to explain more things. Say more. This just seemed like a really fun thing. I would not keep it running all the time, but
you sold one last week.
Woo!
Yeah,
and sold at 1% commission, 3 cents.
See, well, but you could have, Stacey. I could have bought it through you or you, Leo.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like.
I don't want to spend
a fourth week on the cruise.
This is why I'm not rich. I'm not spending time thinking about monetization particularly. I'm just trying to keep my head above water. Jeff Jarvis, you have a number for us?
So I'm going to fake this one. So I was going through links today and I saw that already Search Engine Land is gearing up to be writing about the Google 20th anniversary.
Oh, my God. When's that going to be?
Approaching. Later this year. So we're going to have the endless birthday festival of Google. But I did say, you know, 2 decades of Google, man. That's
hard to believe. That's amazing.
But still, in Gutenberg time, it's only 1470.
It's nothing. What would we have done if there had been no Google? We'd still be using Alta Vista. mine is not something I necessarily recommend, but I think it's kind of interesting. If you're Encyclopedia Britannica, you're really wondering, what do we do in the 21st century? There's this free thing called Wikipedia that in many cases actually is better and more up to date than Encyclopedia Britannica. Yet Britannica has for years, generations been considered the, you know, kind of definitive, keeper of truth. So they've made they're going to make some big bucks on this, a Chrome extension called Britannica Insights. And as you're in your search, as you're looking around on the right, you'll get a new knowledge graph with Britannica content. So the same, this is, I guess, in addition to the Google. Shall we search for something and see? Let's look for Macedonia, because Macedonia is about to rename itself because of the Greek. There's the Britannica Insight above the knowledge card from Google. So if I want to learn more about Macedonia, in addition to the Wikipedia entry, it's a good way to kind of make their assertion. You can at least compare the two. It's free. Britannica, Wikipedia. Britannica, Wikipedia. There's a little tip for you, something to add to your Chrome.
Everything in the cause of truth.
Yeah, I think that they probably saw this as an opportunity to jump on the truth bandwagon. Jeff Jarvis is the... Say it again.
All right, ready? I got to take a deep breath here. I am the Leonard Tow Professor for Journalistic Innovation at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. And I am also the director of the Tow Knight Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism there.
Can we put that... Theirs is a blog post on Medium. Can we put that in his lower third? Can we fit that?
You can just have a scroll. Tiny. Oh, there you go.
Constant scroll. Maybe by the end of the show, we'd get to the end of the title. He is also a blogger, buzzmachine.com, author of many a great book, including.
And as I always point out, co-host of This Week in Google, a very proud thing for me.
Very
and
important.
Finally, at the end of the show, I have a decent picture.
Yeah, look at that. You look real.
I finally do.
What happened?
I know this. I feel like I'm egotistical, always pointing at a picture, but I always look so effing weird.
Have you been tweeting it there?
And awful. I tweak as it goes awful. Well, but the sun is down.
It looks
and
like,
Stacey, meanwhile, is in the dark.
She's like in the suicide place.
She still looks good, though. Stacey always
does.
No. It's all right. The show's over, Stacey. There's no point. She's drawing the blinds. No, it's not dinner time for me. It's dinner time for you and Stacey, though, on the East Coast.
That's right, yeah.
Stacey.
Wait, Stacey, what do you have for dinner?
Tamales.
Ooh. Oh, homemade?
No.
You got a store you go to?
It's not Christmas season.
What does one serve with tamales?
Guacamole.
Ooh, yum. Salsa and queso.
I also have a blueberry spinach salad. Oh,
with you. Gosh, I love it when they mix the fruit in with the salad, the sweet and the savory. I love that. I like a watermelon feta salad. That's so good.
Ooh, that is good.
Isn't that good? Maybe a little bit of microgreens thrown in there. I'm rereading Anthony Bourdain's Kitchen Confidential. Oh, now I never want to eat out again. And then his follow-up book I want to read as well. I never got on the Bourdain train, but he really was a great writer.
And I loved watching the show when I did. The problem is it was on and off, but I just...
Well, the good news, Netflix has decided it was going to go down, and they're going to keep it on indefinitely now. Great tribute to...
Because it wasn't about the food. It was about people. It was
about people, about travel.
Openness to cultures.
Yeah, which is why I can't believe that I wasn't a regular viewer. But I will be. I'm going to go back through them all.
So sad. It's too sad for me now.
Well, this whole mental health thing, it's, now reading Kitchen Confidential with that in mind, you can see the periods of ups and downs. He probably was undiagnosed bipolar.
His addiction. And
yeah, you can see it. It's very sad. Ladies and gentlemen, Stacey's at Stacey on IoT.com. Subscribe to her newsletter. Listen to her podcast with Kevin Toefel. Tweet at her at Giga Stacey.
Buy things from her.
Buy things from her as soon as her affiliate links are active.
Stacey Store.
Stacey, I was going to say, it's not going to be my store. It's going to send you to Amazon.
I like the Stacey Store.
Yeah.
No, you can do. Oh, Stacey, look into it. You can do an Amazon store. Your Amazon store.
Yeah.
Oh, they have all these things you can do with that.
Oh.
You could have Stacey Store.
Oh, my God. Someone just put in the chat room, tamales in a can.
Oh!
Sorry. No, chat room.
Oh, you're poisoning her.
That look, we have to get a screenshot of that look.
They're from Walmart.
That was the tamale look.
Hormel tamales, beef and chili sauce. Mm-mm,
oh,
good.
Lord. Oh,
if you live in Austin, Lord. This would be a crime.
Yes.
Oh, thank you, Marsworm. Or if Marsworm.
Marsworm. You grew up on those or you threw up on those? Both.
I don't know.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for being here this week in Google, the wide-ranging, ever-changing show about nothing.
Another show is in the tamale can.
Show is in the tamale can. We do this.
Jeff, I think we should buy the can and taste test them.
What have I done to you, Stacey?
Queso. You've proven yourself. Ready to die.
I think these would be amazing dipped in chipotle queso.
Exactly. I'm sorry, Leo. You were trying to end
the show. Truth is, anything would taste good dipped in queso. You could dip shoe leather in queso. It would be fabulous.
Not chipotle queso.
Not chipotle. Real queso. We do this show every Wednesday afternoon, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC. Come by and say hi. Join us at twit.tv/live. There's live on demand, live video and live audio. If you do watch live, chat live at irc.twit.tv, but you can also watch on demand anytime at twit.tv/twig or wherever finer podcasts are aggregated. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.